Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Thursday Night Football. Hyped up on that game last night. Panthers v. Steelers. Hyped up because you had two of the hottest teams in the NFL. One team on a three-game winning streak. One team on a four-game winning streak. If ever there was a Thursday night game that felt like, I don't know, a Sunday night game, it was last night's game until it started. And then it ended in a hurry. All that buzz coming into that game was about the Panthers' offense and about how Norv Turner had completely transformed it. About how Norv and his kid were the best things that ever happened to Cam Newton. And early on, that buzz did appear to be justified. Norval might not be the greatest head coach ever, but my man can dial up an offense. And the Panthers rolled into Pittsburgh last night with Cam Newton playing at an MVP level, Christian McCaffrey looking like Stanford Christian McCaffrey. So what happens? They go right down the field in their opening drive. In Pittsburgh's house, in prime time, Newton, McCaffrey, carve up the Steelers on a 75-yard TD drive, capped off by a 20-yard TD pass from Newton to McCaffrey. 7-0 Panthers. It looked like it was going to be a very long night for Pittsburgh, but then it wasn't. The Steelers get the ball back, and they did this on their very first play from scrimmage.
Roethlisberger pump. Roethlisberger throws deep, near side, caught. Juju Smith-Schuster, 25-20, racing to the end zone. Touchdown, one play, 75-yard bomb.
7-7, Westwood 1. 7-7, now we've got ourselves a ball game. No, we don't, because this was the very next play.
New play action, look out. Newton nearly sacked in the end zone, throws it, intercepted.
Over the middle,
caught at the 10, into the end zone. Uh-oh. Touchdown, Vince Williams. And what a turn of events in Pittsburgh.
14-7 Steelers, 13 seconds, 14 points. Game changed, game ended. Carolina got the ball back. They managed to move a total of 1 yard. They punted. Pittsburgh drives 61 yards, and they end the drive with this.
Connor up the middle, powers his way in. Touchdown, Steelers. James Connor bulldozes to the end zone.
21-7 Steelers. We're still in the first quarter. Ball game. Thanks for coming, because it did not get much better for the Panthers. In fact, it got worse. Much, much worse. Every single time Cam Newton dropped back, somebody in all black was up in his face or his chest. Every time Ben Roethlisberger dropped back, he found somebody. 22 of 25, 328 yards, 5 TDs, and a perfect passer rating. You want more? Try this.
Ben, first and 10, shotgun snap. He's back, throws along down the sideline, and the pass is caught against Antonio Brown, stepping into the end zone for the Pittsburgh Steelers touchdown. He just blew by the corner, and Jackson did not have a chance.
Steelers radio on the call. Antonio Brown for 6, and no, I'm not going to make some lame joke about him speeding on the roads and on the field. The guy was allegedly pulled over for driving 100 earlier in the day. So there's nothing funny about reckless speeding and endangering yourself and others. But that was not a distraction, because nothing was going to distract the Steelers last night. Not players speeding, not players who weren't there. They were locked in on Carolina. As Steelers offensive guard Ramon Foster said, quote, "That team wanted to come in here and embarrass us. We just answered the call," end quote. Actually, they did more than answer the call. They ripped the phone off the wall, and they smashed Carolina in the face with it. It was such a dominant performance. The Steelers were all but apologizing for it. Mike Tomlin said, quote, "We are probably not that good." Marquise Pouncey said, quote, "This is not normal." I mean, it was so good and so dominant that even some cat on Twitter was posting, quote, "Juju is so special, man. James, go crazy then. And I think it's safe to say it's time to pass the sticks." Oh yeah, that guy. That rando. The all-pro running back who's good for nearly 2,000 yards per season, who is not on the team right now. Yeah, I don't know who's more tired of talking about him, his teammates or me. Call it a tie for last. Just like I don't know if he was genuinely hyping his guys or if he just wanted to keep his name on everybody's minds. But I know this. Nobody who watched that game last night thought the offense really missed him, because it doesn't. Now, don't get me wrong. They'll take Le'Veon Bell back. And if Connor is in concussion protocol, then it becomes even more serious. But they did not miss him last night. They did not miss him the previous month. Not when they were ripping off five straight and beating down legitimate playoff teams by 31. That game was such a blowout. The Steelers cracked a half a hundred early in the fourth. They could have gone for 60 or even 70. They ripped the hearts out of Carolina, and then they rested for the final 15 minutes. I mean, that was such a beatdown, such a blowout. Eric Reed's ejection was an afterthought. Didn't even matter. So come to find out, the Steelers' season did not end after 4 weeks. Mike Tomlin has not lost that team. If anything else, he's as sharp as he's ever been. And as usual, Pittsburgh is right where they always are, playing their best football when it matters most and headed back to the postseason once again. And they've got every bit as much right to the AFC as the Chiefs and the Patriots do too. In other words, same as they ever were. Nothing has changed. 1-800-636-8686. Can't say that I saw that coming. Cannot say that I saw that coming. Can't say that anybody saw that coming. Except for one guy. Except for one guy. The last guy that you would think would see something like that coming. There's nobody anywhere who saw that beatdown coming. Except for one guy. The biggest cooler ever. He saw it. He called it. 1-800-636-8686. I've got that part of that story coming up a little bit later on. My man, Trevor Price is back. Checking out the early email. Rome, I thought that would have been a much closer game. Pittsburgh won that game with great play in all three phases. Who needs Bell with all the weapons they have on offense already? And their offensive line is protecting Ben Roethlisberger very well. If their defense can pressure Tom Brady like they pressured Cam Newton tonight, they've got a shot to beat New England. Wait, what? Is there a punchline in there? You don't want to call anybody ugly? You don't want to say somebody's a bum? That's a straight TNF take. Yeah, I mean, I agree. I just spent like 9 minutes saying the same thing. You're right, though. You're absolutely right. That offensive line for the Steelers does not get nearly enough credit. In fact, looking at them right now, I don't think there's a better offensive line in the NFL than Pittsburgh. And when Ben gets that kind of time with the weapons he has, he's going to do some real damage the way he has the last five games. When they're getting after the quarterback the way they did Cam Newton last night, they're going to create a lot of problems. What I'm saying is, same as they ever were, they look great. Wasn't Ben going to retire 2 years ago? Didn't Ben try to retire 2 years ago? Wasn't he going to? Sure he wasn't. Looking at Ben right now, much like Drew Brees and Tom Brady, this guy can do it as long as he wants. He's lost nothing. Hey, Rome, you're right. The Steelers really carved up the Panthers last night. That makes two of us. Yours, Norv T's face. Aaron in Omaha. That's the kind of imbecility that I was talking about. Wore a winter wonderland in Lincoln, Nebraska. Capped off with a frost-tastic dub. Yeah, thanks, Aaron. You can take the rest of the day off. I do not want to talk about Norv's face. Now, if you want to talk about Norv Turner and what he's done for Cam, we can do that. If you want to talk about Norv and his son and what they both have done for Cam Newton, we can do that. Because coming into that game, we were led to believe, and I admit I bought it myself. It's only one game. It's a really bad game, but it's just one game. These guys had worked wonders for Cam Newton. But when you get the kind of push that Pittsburgh did from the front seven, it doesn't matter who your coordinator is or who his son is. Cam's not making any plays on his back. Hey, Rome. Wow. The Steelers showed us that we have a lot of holes that need to be fixed. Sign Norv. I don't get that, Lee. Chris no longer in St. Pete tweets, Norv's offense melted down last night like the one time his face melted while on spring break. Don't really understand that either. Norv Turner is one of the most well-respected offensive coaches in the NFL. When I think of him, I think of that. When I think of him, I think of a guy who was kind of an average head coach, mediocre head coach. Not everybody's cut out to be a head coach, but this guy's an amazing coordinator. So what the hell are y'all talking about? Friday's Daily Jungle is repped by Ferguson. Listen to this. No matter how big or small your team is, Ferguson has a winning game plan for pro contractors with thousands of plumbing repair parts, knowledgeable associates, and the largest national footprint in the game. When the pressure is on, you can count on Ferguson. Jeff and Raleigh, TGIFF Van Smack. The grind includes Flight Deck Friday. Let's get it. Let me tell you about the Flight Deck. My man had a tough night. I don't know if you've been following on social. There was yet another Twitter purge. What Twitter's trying to do is get rid of all the bots and fake followers. So there's been a couple of purges where, you know, people are obsessed with their follower accounts. And then all of a sudden you wake up and you look at it, you're like, wait, what? What? Last night I had, you know, whoever you may be. Wow, last night I had 3,484 followers, and now I've got 2,900. What happened? Yeah, well, do me a favor. Just leave Flight Deck Friday alone, because my man lost 3 followers in the purge last night. 3. He started the night with 183. Now he's down to 180. That is a very bitter pill to have to swallow on a Friday. Get off my man's back, Jeff. 3. Bro, you better get after it. You got to get him back. You got to get those 3 back. What I would do, Flight Deck, if I were you, is take your phone, point it at your head, hit click, and push it out there, and then pin it. Dude, those 3 losses will be 5 gained, I promise. Pete in Kalamazoo tweets, Ben did retire 2 years ago. Son, Jennifer Gardner. You know, I've got a really good sports talk show with really good takes, really good interviews, and really, really crappy tweets from you. Do better. Do freaking better. No tweets about Norv Turner. No tweets from Jennifer Gardner. Let's talk some college basketball. We are joined right now by the head coach at TCU. He's entering his 3rd season with the Horned Frogs, a recipient of 4 National Coach of the Year awards. He led TCU to the NCAA tournament last season, and that's the first time that program has gone in 20 years. He has led TCU to 21 seasons in each of his first 2 years, the first time the school's had back-to-back 21 seasons in nearly 2 decades. TCU is 1-0. They're number 20 in the AP poll, and they are hosting Oral Roberts on Sunday. Jamie Dixon is my guest. Jamie, it's good to have you back. How are you?
Oh, doing great, Jim. How you doing?
Doing great. Jamie, great to hear your voice. You're coming off a win over Cal State Bakersfield on Wednesday, 66-61. Seems like you've got a lot of new guys on the roster. 2 of your key players didn't play. So what did you learn about the team in that first game?
I'm looking forward to game number 2. That's how we're looking at it, getting a couple good practices in. It's been an interesting year we had 3 guys that had played college basketball on the floor on Wednesday, or Tuesday, I should say. But we're going to get better. I'm excited about it, and it's a young crew, but it's going to be a good team, and we'll be playing our best basketball as the year progresses.
Jamie Dixon, my guest. Jamie, I had Eric Musselman on the show the other day, and he talked about how tough October can be for a head coach and a program because it's a long grind of just your guys versus your guys. How good then did it feel to finally get that season underway and face somebody in a different uniform?
It was good. I mean, we've had an interesting off season because of the injuries and different guys out, and I almost feel like this is a later start for us as far as practice time, because we're starting to get some new guys back, and again, the new guys learning our stuff, competing, all the things that go with it. It has been it's been a different year for me because I've never had these many new guys, 8 new guys who have never played a game of college basketball among our 13 scholarship guys. So there's some challenges.
I mean, Jamie, it's really unusual. So you're in a situation where you've never been before, and at the same time, you've got expectations. You're now a top 20 team. You know you're going to get everybody's best shot, and you're dealing with guys who haven't even played college ball before. How are you dealing with those expectations as it relates to your players?
Well, we've tried to deal with it early. I mean, I talked about, this ranking and these expectations are, these guys have really not accomplished anything at this level. And we tried to get that out there early, but sometimes you just got to go through it. And that's kind of what we're going through. So our scrimmages were good, but not great. And we weren't great the other day, but we played hard. Our execution will be better on Sunday. I believe that. So it's sometimes you can tell them, you can give them stories, you can show them film, but they just got to go through it and learn from mistakes. And we did that on Wednesday, and I think the progress will be in these next couple days.
TCU head basketball coach Jamie Dixon's my guest. So you're developing a culture and a mindset. As part of that, you've got the Big Tough Frog Award that you give out. What is that award all about, and what's the mindset you're looking to create with it?
Well, we wanted to get tougher. We wanted to get better defensively. We had to. Last year, we were as good as anybody in the country offensively. Our efficiency numbers were in the top five of the 351 schools, but our defense was not where it needed to be. So we've created a stat system, a point system, whereby we're rewarding those guys that do the little things on the defensive end, that make the tough plays, the plays that don't show up, whether it be the contesting shots, whether it be the blockouts, setting the screen, but just keeping it accountable and a numbered system. So you can't argue with the numbers, and so that's what we put across. And UI was our junior college transfer, was our award winner the other day. So I think it's something that's going to help us as we go forward, because it's what we need to get better at, and the little things on the defensive end especially.
Jamie Dixon joining us once again. So senior guard Alex Robinson, Jamie, was talking about how there was a time before you arrived where he could walk around on campus and nobody would recognize him, but that's all changed. Season tickets are sold out. The Frog Army is loud. You're ranked in the top 20, and there's a lot of buzz. I understand that you have challenges. I understand you're focused on the season. But as a TCU alum, what's it mean to you to see that kind of change on campus in that new atmosphere?
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, we're sold out. The students were tremendous the other day. I wish we would have played better for them, but they'll be back on Sunday. And it does. There's more to it when you come back. I mean, I think some people questioned why would leave the success we had at Pitt, but I just felt that TCU could be a great place for basketball. Obviously, Gary had a great success in football, and I just felt that the things were in place, and I wanted to be the guy that helped bring it back. We had a good run when I was here a long time ago as a player, but it was short-lived, and we had two good years, but I want to build a program and that our university can be proud of, and that seems to be what's going on. So nationally, we're getting some recognition, and we're big out in California, which has been really fun to see now, and we're just looking forward to just keep building and drawing fans throughout the country, especially out west.
Now, I know you're big out here. A lot of the kids, and I've got a senior now in high school, Jamie, and a lot of the kids want to go to TCU.
Yeah,
I
know. When I went out here 30 years ago, it was no one knew where TCU was, and now it's a place to go from California, so it's exciting.
Jamie Dixon, my guest for a few more moments. You know, it's one thing to say that you want to go back there and build something. I think what's worth noting is you didn't go to TCU or come back and say, I've got a five-year plan to get us back to the tournament, or I'm going to need some time to get this thing turned around. You expected to be in the tournament much faster than that, so why did you take that approach, as many coaches would have come to try to lower expectations?
Yeah, I know. That's kind of been the way people do it, and maybe that's the right way. But we had a unique situation. We had four seniors that were back, and they had gone through tough times. They had an 0-18 year. They had a 1-17 year in conference. They had a lot of injuries. They had a reconstruction of the arena. They were playing at a community center down the road. They just had been through a lot, and I just didn't feel like we could sell them short in their senior year. I wanted them to have the best senior year they could possibly have, and they had committed to coming to TCU and building it, and it maybe took a little longer, but I just didn't want them to go away with feeling they hadn't done something. They'd done a lot, and those four guys were really what turned us around, and they sacrificed. They weren't our leading scorers, but they gave us everything they could, and some guys were starters that became reserves, and that was really why I didn't want to look to the future. I wanted to let those guys leave, and that's Chris Washburn, Brandon Parrish, and Vlad, and Alex Robinson was the other guy with that group, as well as Mike Williams. So it was those guys that we wanted to keep on board.
Jamie Dixon with us. One more thought. You know, at the same time, it's not like you're doing this in an easy conference. From Kansas and Kansas State, West Virginia, Oklahoma, Texas, Texas Tech, the list goes on. The Big 12 is loaded with tough teams and excellent coaches. Now, you were part of some of the legendary meat grinder schedules in the Big East. How does the Big 12 compare to those schedules in the Big East back in the day?
Well, the thing I love about our league is the 10 teams and the round robin, and everybody's playing the same schedule. Oftentimes, that was a big impact on who was winning conference, just by the schedule you played. So with this, you know you're going to get the true champion. But this thing that makes it different, too, here is there's no bad team in this conference. I always felt in the Big East and even the ACC, there was some times where there was a team that was rebuilding or going through some issues or just not quite to the level. But here, it's been every team. My first year, Texas and Oklahoma finished 9th and 10th. I mean, it gives you an idea how good this conference is. And I think that's why it's the best in the country and why it's become. The one thing holding us back from getting the recognition, even though the numbers have shown it, for the last 5 years, we've been by far the best, is Kansas winning every year. And we've got someone else has got to win it for us to keep talking about how good this conference is. You can't have one team dominant and then talk about how strong it is top to bottom. So someone's got to win. They're good again. Maybe they're better than they were last year, but somehow we got to figure out a way.
TCU 1-0. They're number 20 in the AP poll, and they're at home against Oral Roberts on Sunday. Head coach Jamie Dixon, our guest. Jamie, so good to get caught up. Really appreciate that.
Great, Jim. Thanks so much.
If you're looking to get down this weekend on a full slate of football, make sure you check out MyBookie. You know, ever since I started doing this podcast, people have been asking me over and over again for advice. Normally, they want to know, who to bet? Who do you bet this week? Listen, the truth is, I don't know, right? I can give you an educated take, but I don't know for certain. Now, I know a lot of you think you do know. I know a lot of you know you know. If that's the case, you need to check out MyBookie. Remember, who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. This is why I always tell people to bet with MyBookie. Trust me, they are the very best bet this season. They have been in business for years, they have great reviews online, and their mobile site is so easy to use. I would only recommend a service to you that I've been using myself. This is why I'm urging you to make your way to MyBookie. You win, they pay. They have in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and for you fantasy guys out there, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join right now, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Use the promo code ROME and activate that offer. Visit MyBookie online today. That's MyBookie. Do not forget to use the promo code ROME when creating your account, and you can claim up to $1,000 in free play. You play, you win, you get paid with MyBookie. So look at some of the matchups, or looking at them this weekend. Week 10. A slate of games that are pretty interesting. Pretty interesting, and there's actually a couple of really good matchups. The one that's hard to ignore, though, is the reunion that's going down in Smashville this weekend. The Hood is getting back together with part of his old crew. I mean, the Titans are essentially Patriot South. Head coach Mike Vrabel won 3 rings with the Pats. GM John Robinson spent 12 years in the New England personnel department. Defensive coordinator Dean Pease spent a half a dozen years coaching for the Hood. Deion Lewis just jumped ship for a big contract in Tennessee after 3 seasons in New England. Logan Ryan, 3 years, $30 million to do the same thing. Oh, and then there's Malcolm Butler. You remember Malk. I know the Hood does. He gets a chance to go up against the guy that he glued to the sideline during Super Bowl 52. Can you say, awkward? Still one of the all-time histories or mysteries in NFL history. Like, what happened? We still don't know. Was Butler sick? Did he break a team rule? What was the Hood thinking? exactly what went down. We all want to know. And leave it to a jungle legend like Dan Shaughnessy over the summer to try to find out once and for all what went down. Two legends going back and forth, The Hood and Dan Shaughnessy.
We've talked about that. That's multiple months ago.
Is there going to be any more explanation about why he didn't play?
Focused on training camp.
Would you do it any differently?
Training camp? Well, we're getting started. We're working on that right now. We'll do it the best we can. I'm focused on doing the best that I can for the 2018 New England Patriots. That's my job. That's what I'm going to do. That's what I've always done in the past. You know, every day that I've coached here, I've done the best that I could for this football team, and I'll continue to do that. And right now, my focus is on the 2018 season, not 2017, not 2014, not 2007, not 2004, not 2001, not 2000. I'm not focused on any of those seasons. They're done. It's important for me to have a good season in 2018. I'm going to do everything I can to do that, do the best that I can for our football team. That's my job, and that's my responsibility. That's what I'm going to try to do. Hopefully you can respect that, but maybe not.
Maybe not. The Shaughninator getting after the Hood, getting under his skin, and getting into his head. Have you ever heard the Hood go off like that? The Hood went off. Yeah, trust me, he'll remember. He'll remember that Malcolm Butler did not play in that game but for a snap, and that didn't work out. He'll remember because he doesn't forget anything at all. And if you thought that the Hood was going to get hooked into another one of those exchanges, think again. He knew what was coming. He spent 16 minutes talking about the Titans earlier this week, over 1,800 words. And none of those 1,800 words were either Malcolm or Butler. But here's a transcript from when a journo tried to put him on the spot. A reporter said, quote, "A scouting service has Malcolm Butler allowing the most catches among NFL cornerbacks." The Hood, fully sarcastic, and I quote, "That means a lot to me." Here's the thing. You know the Hood knows that. You know the Hood is more than well aware of that fact. You know the rest of the NFL will also know that come Sunday. Because lost in that debacle in the Big D, where the Titans stunted on the Cowboys logo, was the fact that Butler got torched twice against the Cowboys. I mean, lost in this season is that it looks like the Hood did what he always does, cut bait at the absolute right time. You see, the Titans have given up just 11 touchdown passes this season, but Butler has been on the wrong side of 7 of them. Amari Cooper got him at the goal line. Allen Hurns turned him inside out on Monday night. I mean, they're keeping a list of the dudes who have thrown Butler in the toaster this season. Kenny Stills went 75 yards on him in week 1. D-Hop and Will Fuller scored from long range on him a week later. Jordan Matthews scored from 56 yards out. Crabtree got him in week 6. 5-year, $61 million contracts do not normally come with burn marks. But him getting torched this year does not validate the Hood, leaving him on the sideline while Nick Foles was shredding that D in the game that mattered most. I mean, that's still an all-time whack decision by a coach who generally pushes the right buttons on Sundays. And while Butler claims that all is good, and that he and the Hood connected over the summer, and that the Hood reached out to him to congratulate him on that contract and wish him luck in Tennessee, I can guarantee you a couple things right now. Number one, Butler badly wants a piece of this dude. Badly. And number two, the Hood is coming straight for him. We know how the Hood operates with ruthless efficiency. He sees a weakness, he targets that weakness, and he attacks. And if the weakness happens to be a dude who he rode to one Super Bowl win but iced in a Super Bowl loss, then I guess even better for the Hood. So make sure you get your work in during warmups, Malk, because there's going to be a freaking target on your back come 1 o'clock Eastern. The Hood can do all he wants to ignore that, but you know he's coming right at this guy. You know he will. We're joined right now by the host of the Open Floor podcast. He covers the NBA also for SI.com. He is a jungle legend. Ben Golver is my guest. Ben, it's great to have you back. How are you?
Oh, I'm great, Jim. How are you doing?
I'm awesome, Ben. Great to talk to you as always. Let's start first with the Bucks and Golden State, Ben. Bucks blow Golden State out last night, but the Warriors were without Draymond Green. Then Steph Curry left early with an injury. How much would you read into that game?
not too much into that game, but I got to say, the Steph injury is already looking like the biggest bummer of the start of this season. I mean, when he plays for the Golden State Warriors during the Steve Kerr tenure, they're a 69-win team on average. When he doesn't play, they're a 44-win team. And we're talking about a 25-win swing when he's on the court versus when he's off the court. And it's not just the production in terms of wins and losses. It's also just the fun factor. I mean, I think you saw that, you know, last night too, where all season long, Steph's just been in this magical groove. I mean, looking like MVP Steph, probably playing the best basketball of his career on both sides, you know, both offensively and defensively. Without him, they lose a lot of their spunk, their heart, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, already being down Draymond, they just didn't have enough. I do think that Milwaukee's got to be viewed, though, as one of the biggest stories here in this early season. They're never going to get the attention because they're that small market team, and they've been, you know, not great for probably the last 20 years or so. But to me, this is a team that has a legit chance to make the Eastern Conference Finals. And if you're looking for a final sleeper, you know, some team that could just crash the party, surprise everybody, and make the NBA Finals, to me, it's Giannis and the Milwaukee Bucks.
Ben Golver joining us. I agree with you, Ben. Let's go back to Steph for a minute, and time will tell. Hopefully it's not a bad injury, but if he were to come back and he were to pick up where he left off and have that kind of monster year that it looks like he was on his way to having, what would that mean to his legacy and how he's viewed among the all-time great NBA players, especially as it relates to the way he's changed that game and the league?
Well, Jim, you know, people have been sick of the Warriors for a long time, but it's been an awfully long time already. And they're stacking up a lot of wins, you know, during this time period. I mean, pretty soon we're going to be looking at Steph in the conversation with guys like Magic in terms of how many rings he has. You know, potentially a guy like Michael Jordan in terms of how many rings he has. And I think, you know, the big thing that everyone circled is like, you know, will Kevin return next summer? And to me, even if he leaves, Golden State's still potentially a championship team next season, even without Kevin Durant. I mean, that would maybe put them in position if they wanted to, you know, bring a DeMarcus Cousins back. You know, maybe they would be able to do that and kind of retool without Durant. And that would also just still keep Stephen Curry in that conversation for, you know, adding titles and MVPs and all the other types of awards he's already accumulated here, you know, during this time period. So I think by the end of this season, you know, assuming Golden State, you know, wins the title, I think the big conversation we're going to be having next summer is who's the greatest point guard of all time, Magic Johnson or Stephen Curry. And I think that that's going to gain and build momentum. I think there's going to be a real, you know, opportunity, whether it's next season or 2 years down the road, where opinions start to shift and people say, look, Steph Curry has completely changed the way the game has played. Everyone's shooting three-pointers. Everyone's playing faster. They're trying to mimic Steph Curry. He's had this gigantic impact on the sport, and that's going to add to his legacy as well. So, you know, to me, I would not be surprised at all if he's a top 10 player by the time he retires. And frankly, I think, you know, top five, that conversation, if he continues winning like they've been winning, he could be there too.
Wow. Ben Golver joining us. So, Ben, if that's all true, you know, all that said, of course, about Michael Jordan. So for a number of years, Ben, it was like, who's the next Mike? Who's the next Mike? And we kept looking for the next Michael Jordan. Are we going to have that same conversation about Steph Curry? And are we going to look at guys like Trae Young? Or is that maybe kind of a one-off?
Hey, Jim, we're already there. This guy's got a whole generation of imitators. I mean, you've got Trae Young. You look at Jamal Murray in Denver. To me, he should win, you know, probably most improved player. He has a real shot at that award this year, and his whole game is very Steph Curry-oriented. He had 48 points the other night, really skilled shooter. I mean, I see him as an all-star in a couple of years. You even look at how Damian Lillard has started to play his game, you know, kind of, you know, adjusting and shooting even more threes off the dribble over the last couple of years. I think there's a real you know, Steph Curry influence there. Kemba Walker has really evolved into this all-star level player, a guy who's played excellent basketball here early this season too. I think you see some Steph Curry influence in terms of how his team uses him with the ball as well. So I think you're just going to continue to see it. I mean, Trae Young is the most obvious example because he loves to pull up from so deep, and you know, there's so much, you know, kind of cockiness and on-ball flair to his game and great passing ability that also reminds you of Steph too. But I think there's going to be a whole generation of these guys. And I think we should also look at the NBA rules. I mean, they're changing the rules to really benefit the little guys, right? You can't hold and grab and tug guys when they're off the ball. So if you're Steph Curry and you want to fly around, get yourself open for some, you know, quality three-point shots, nobody can hold you. Nobody can bump you. Nobody can restrict your movement. It makes your life a lot easier. It makes it easier for your teammates to get you good shots. And That's why you're seeing such a big scoring burst in the league right now. I mean, everybody's getting numbers because the NBA was smart enough to realize that Steph Curry is the golden goose, and let's try to make as many players as possible play like this guy.
We're talking to Ben Golliver. So, Ben, go back to Kevin Durant for a minute. If you had to guess, what's important to him? Like, he went there, he's had fun playing there, he's got his rings, but he's got a chance to bounce and opt out. So what do you think's in his head? Does he want to go someplace else and be the man, or does he like it where he is?
Hey, Jim, you can't ask me these impossible questions, okay? I don't even think he knows. I mean, remember back in the Oklahoma City decision? He was regretting that decision in the, you know, he was kind of at least second-guessing it or like, why did I do this? I mean, that was a sentiment that came out after he left Oklahoma City to go to Golden State. Now, obviously, I think history has proven he made the right call. And, you know, for him to just kind of, you know, put any regrets or second thoughts out of his mind and just continue playing basketball was the right way to approach it. But, you know, looking forward, it's not clear to me. Does he want to be the man? Does he want to be a part of this dynasty? Is he happy just running people off the court constantly? Does market matter to him? Is there some benefit of being the man in, say, a city like New York, you know, kind of taking that LeBron model of, you know, being a, you know, a sort of like a mega star in a mega market? Or does being part of what Golden State's got going on still appeal to him? I'll say this. From a basketball history perspective, the way the Warriors have played early this season when they've been healthy has been some of the most dominating, beautiful basketball I've ever seen. I think it would be a shame if he left. I know that's boring because nobody's figured out a way to stop these guys, and they're just going to continue on with their dynasty if he does stay. But to me, I think that's the best move for his legacy because he'll be stacking up lots and lots of you know, awards. And I mentioned earlier, we could have that conversation like Steph versus Magic, you know, really getting serious next summer. I think the same thing is true with Kevin Durant, by the way. By next summer, I think it's going to be Kevin Durant versus Larry Bird. Where do those guys stack up in terms of that small forward position? And I think at some point here, pretty soon, Kevin's going to move past Larry Bird. And now we're going to be saying, okay, can Kevin catch LeBron? And obviously, that's a trickier formula. There's no question about it, but that's the kind of history he's playing with if he stays with Golden State.
Ben Golliver joining us. You know, when you talk about Golden State like that, Ben, it sounds like they're almost unbeatable, but the Rockets pushed them pretty hard in the conference finals. In fact, had them on the ropes, yet Houston, Ben, is 4-6 this year. How worried should the Rockets be when you look at the way they're playing on both ends of the floor?
I'm concerned for them. You know, I was one of their biggest advocates last year. I thought that they could really make life difficult for Golden State, and they even exceeded my expectations. They really pushed them hard. And I still don't think they get quite enough credit for how difficult that Western Conference Finals was for Golden State. But this Rockets team just looks totally different. They've lost players. They've lost their defensive identity. The new guys they've added have not been good fits really at all. Their stars are not performing to their star level. And, you know, it starts with Harden and then goes to Chris Paul. And they're just right down the list. And this is something that we see a lot in the NBA. I mean, when you have that magical dream season, and they did last year, I mean, 65 wins, the most in franchise history, everything went right. It is so difficult to repeat that, to get everybody, you know, clicking on those cylinders. You know, Harden won his MVP. So now does he come back with the same level of oomph from day one? Clint Capella got paid. Does he come back with the same mentality from day one? You lose some veteran guys who are really important guys, you know, defensive type players who give you your identity on that end. And they just look like a completely different team. And if I'm Golden State, I mean, I think they should have been worried about Houston last year. I don't really see a lot of concern for them. If I were them, I would not be worried in the slightest about the Rockets. You know, a team like Denver or maybe even Portland would give me more concern at this point than Houston does.
Ben Golliver, my guest. Ben, before you go, let me ask you about Zion Williamson. He goes off for Duke, and Steve Kerr says, quote, I thought that was a one-shot deal, but apparently the next guy's coming, end quote. Look, I know you're a hoops guy, and you didn't just wake up to Zion on Tuesday night. What do you make of what you've seen from him over the years and also this week?
No, he's incredible, and he's been great for, you know, 3 years. Like, he's just dominated Instagram since he was, like, 15 years old in high school. I mean, he's been the Instagram sensation. There's no doubt about it. I think we need to be careful with any LeBron comparison. That's not fair. You know, it wasn't fair to Trae Young to say, hey, you're going to be Steph Curry. It's not fair to Zion to say you're going to be LeBron James. I still think LeBron James is a one-off, to kind of use Steve Kerr's own language. But I do think Zion's the type of guy who will pull hyperbole out of you, who will get you really, really hyped up, because his combination of size, strength, motor, athleticism, you know, sheer, you know, vertical leap. I mean, all of it is just unprecedented. It's almost like a supercharged Charles Barkley. I mean, at times he reminds me of, like, you know, Draymond Green, but with, like, a much more, like, kind of killer instinct on the offensive end, where he's looking to score first rather than pass first. And then, of course, he can jump out of the gym, too. So he's a highlight a minute. But what really impresses me is his work ethic, his dedication to doing the little things. He'll dive on the ground for loose balls. He'll make defensive plays. He'll key transition opportunities. You know, he'll make a stop on defense, and he'll just take off and go with the ball. He does a lot of the little things. And sometimes these guys who are caught up just dunking and being flashy aren't willing to do that stuff. And Zion absolutely is. He plays the right way. And I'll just say this, Jim. Can we just please let guys like him come straight to the NBA? I mean, let's not waste his time at Duke. I'm sure it's going to be fun watching him, you know, wipe everybody off the court. But come on, let's get this guy in the NBA where he belongs.
Ben Golver, you're not going to get an argument from me. Ben Golver joining us. Hey, Ben, one last thought. Let me ask you about Kyrie Irving. Now, he said before the season that he was committed to re-signing in Boston. Do you believe Kyrie when he says that? And better yet, does Kyrie believe Kyrie when he says that?
That's a great question. It's really hard to know. I mean, to me, you have to view everything he says with a degree of skepticism, because that's kind of his track record, right? I mean, he gets off into these Looney Tune conspiracy theories and all this other stuff. And, you know, even when he wants to be serious, it kind of makes you think in the back of your head, like, okay, like, is he playing with the news here? I mean, is he, you know, kind of getting into gray areas? I mean, ultimately, I think Boston is a great fit for him. They have not played very well to start this season, certainly not to their capabilities. But I think they're going to be able to pull it together. Prestigious franchise, great market. They love hoops there, and a chance to win a title every single year. I'm not sure what else he would want. And I really don't see another situation that's going to, you know, in terms of people who would try to make a run at him in free agency, that would be better for him than Boston. But he's a very difficult guy to read. And, you know, like I said, he likes to play with these theories where, you know, you really don't know if you can trust the words that come out of his mouth. So I think that most people will let this season play out. I think he will let this season play out as well. But look, Boston had a lot of pressure on them, you know, coming into this season, lots of expectations. If this is a team that doesn't make the Eastern Conference Finals, I think everything's on the table.
He covers the NBA for SI.com. He's the host of the Open Floor podcast and a legend in these parts too. Ben Golver, my guest. Ben, great to have you back. Nice job. Thank you very much for it.
Oh, my pleasure, Jim. Anytime, man.
Now, you say the name Bill James, and you say that name around a certain subset of seam heads, and you may as well be discussing baseball royalty. The godfather of the statistical revolution, Mr. Moneyball himself, Bill James. And he changed the way the game was played by his research methods. This guy was so important that way back in 06, Time Magazine actually named him one of the most influential people in the world. He cracked the top 100 list. Well, now it's 2018. Keep that in mind for a minute. Time Magazine called this guy one of the 100 most influential people in the world. That was in 06. Now it's 2018. And the city of Boston is ready to rename this dude after that piece of horse crap that Sox fan ate for $38. Because the beer is barely dry on the parade route, and James goes on Twitter and basically named his spreadsheet the MVP of the World Series. In a series of tweets with CBS Sports' Chris Towers, the 69-year-old senior advisor of baseball operations for the Red Sox found out that the internet truly is in ink when he nearly set himself on fire with this ill-advised tweet. Quote, "If the players all retired tomorrow, we would replace them. The game would go on. In 3 years, it would make no difference whatsoever. The players are not the game any more than the beer vendors are." End of quote. I mean, damn, that is some straight baseball dork fire. Some sabermetric lava flowing from the gap of the dude behind baseball's statistical revolution. And wouldn't you know it, the actual dudes who play the game did not like that take. Not at all. Yeah, I don't really have a side in this battle. Not really. I mean, when you see all the shifts that are being deployed and the way teams are using their bullpens and the fact that the status quo has been smashed the last couple of years, I mean, there is a benefit from taking a fresh look at how the game is played. I mean, these advanced stats, sabermetrics, they all play in. They all matter. They factor in. That said, the last time I checked, they were not running duck boats through the city of Boston with the dudes who are slinging $14 beers. I'm pretty sure you cannot win a World Series with a bunch of pivot tables, an Excel spreadsheet, and that paperclip from the Microsoft Office help menu. I mean, Bill, you're a smart guy, and you've done a lot of things to help the game, but that is a terrible take, an all-time terrible take. And the Red Sox themselves could not have moved fast enough to distance themselves from that tweet by releasing the following statement. Quote, Bill James is a consultant to the Red Sox. He is not an employee, nor does he speak for the club. His comments on Twitter were inappropriate, and they do not reflect the opinions of the Red Sox front office or its ownership group. Our championships would not have been possible without our incredibly talented players. They are the backbone of our franchise and our industry. To insinuate otherwise is absurd. It's a strongly worded statement. Meanwhile, Cy Young Award winner Justin Verlander went one step further. He dropped this tweet in response. Wonders if the Red Sox win the World Series with a replacement player for Mookie Betts or J.D. Martinez or David Price or Bogarts or Jackie Bradley Jr. or Chris Sale or Rick Porcello or Andrew Benintendi or Devers of Kimbrel, or he could have gone on and on. He probably would have, but that's an almost 70-year-old dude that he was burying under Fenway Park. So, James tried to double back and clarify what he meant by talking with the New York Times, Tyler Kepner. And by clarify, I mean he did pretty much the opposite. Quote, we have a responsibility not to offend the players, and it's unfortunate that I did offend the players. I didn't mean to do that. I don't know that the idea that the game endures and we're all just passing through is inherently an offensive idea. But if I phrased it in an offensive way, that was not my intention. End quote. Once again, if I offended anybody, I'm really sorry. That's not an apology. If I offended anybody. If you offended anybody, you offended everybody who's ever played the game of baseball. Bill, the game endures is an idea that most people would agree with. I agree. Wally the beer dude being just as valuable as Mookie the Silver Slugger is not something that anybody agrees with. Look, I'm not saying that the caveman here, I'm not going to go caveman here and say that James is some kind of moron and stats are for losers. He's clearly not, and stats aren't either. But that was an idiotic statement to make, backed up on an apology that really was not much better. And if this dude knows anything about stats or trends, then he'll understand this. Now would be a very good time to stop talking, especially if you ever want to set foot in Boston again. Because if you thought that that body bag that Alex Cora set out for the Yankees was ruthless, wait until he gets to the statistician taking credit for those 119 games.
The New York Yankees, yeah, the sky was falling. You know, we lost game two, and he was panicking here. Everybody was like, whoa, it's over. We scored 16 at Yankee Stadium. F*** on it.
And this guy literally said, the players were no more responsible for that world championship than the guys slinging beers. That if we got rid of every single player in 3 years, we'd be right back to where we started from. That the players have nothing to do with it. Yeah, I don't know. I kind of think that Betts had something to do with it. I think JD had something to do with it. I think Kimbrel had something to do with it. Devers had something to do with it. I mean, that's an all-time take. And the Red Sox could not distance themselves fast enough. We are joined right now by a linebacker for the Broncos, coming off another big week. He had 6 tackles and a sack against the Texans on Sunday, 30 tackles, 8 sacks, and a pass defense, plus a forced fumble this season. He leads all rookies with 8 sacks. The NFL Defensive Rookie of the Month for October, he was an All-American, a Nagurski Award winner, an ACC Defensive Player of the Year at NC State. He was the 5th pick overall in the draft, and today he appears courtesy of new Old Spice Foamer, which is available at Walmart. Bradley Chubb is my guest. Bradley, it's good to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me. How you doing?
Doing great. It's great to have you on. So you had another big day on Sunday. You had a sack on Sunday, and that continues to keep you in the lead for most sacks among rookies. Now that you're 9 games into your NFL career, we're at the bye week. What's the year been like for you? Has it been what you expected?
Yeah, man. The year's been real fun. It's been a lot of ups and downs so far. It has been what I expected, though. I knew my transition to the NFL wasn't going to be the easiest thing in the world, so I'm glad that I got on through some challenges and stuff like that. I started off a little bit slower than I wanted to, but just been putting my head down, grinding, and trusting in my teammates, and then good things have started to happen.
All right, so if you're a pass rusher, I can think of few better places to be than Denver. What was your reaction when you knew that Denver was going to pick you and that you get a chance to play alongside Von Miller?
Man, it was huge because I knew I had the opportunity to play with somebody I looked up to, and I pretty much studied my whole college and high school career. So it was real cool to get the opportunity to do that. And Von has been as advertised, a great person, a great teacher, mentor, friend, everything you can think of, and I'm just excited to be a part of it.
Bradley Chubb, my guest. I think teacher is the key word there. Like, for instance, we know he's an amazing athlete, but when you talk to him, it's also clear he's a student of the game. He's always working on his technique. So, like, what kind of things have you learned from him about what it takes to be an elite pass rusher in the NFL?
Oh, man, so many things such as can't let people touch you. Like, don't even let the offensive lineman touch you, stuff like that. Like, just so many little small tips and different things he tells me. And not only just me, but he tells guys like another rookie we have named Jeff Holland, and guys like Shane and Shaq, just been very helpful in everything. And having those guys around has been amazing because I feel like we all feel like we're such a close-knit group, and we just want to keep doing what we need to do.
Listen, I know it's about the team and it's not about you and your numbers, but you are on pace to break his team record for sacks as a rookie and make a serious run at the NFL rookie sack record of 14.5. Is it something that's in the back of your mind, and is it motivating you?
Yeah, it's in the back of my mind for sure. I'm trying not to think about it too much, but that is a little bit of motivation. I want to go out there and just do whatever the team needs me to do, and if that comes with having 14.5 sacks, 15 sacks or whatever, then that's going to be cool with me, and I'm going to be ecstatic. But if it doesn't, then, hey, that's fine too, because as long as the team is doing good and we're winning, we're starting to win a little bit more, then I'm good as a player.
We're talking to Bronco Bradley Chubb. Now, it's not just that you've got vets like Miller who help you out. Your brother Brandon went to Wake Forest. He entered the league a few years back. So what kind of things did he tell you about the NFL and life in the NFL?
Man, he told me it was going to be a different monster than college was. I mean, in the NFL, in college, you're around guys, and when y'all done with practice and school and stuff, y'all go hang out and stuff like that. Y'all ain't got no other worries besides football and school. But in the NFL, guys have families, guys have obligations they got to attend to and stuff like that. So it's not as personal as college and high school were, but it's still the game of football. You just got to go out there each and every day and look at it as a job, and then just have fun while you're doing it, and each day just try to better yourself.
It's good advice, right? Now, there's an amazing story from draft day and the effort your brother made to see you for your big moment. He had a voluntary mini camp with the Lions. It finished at 12:30 p.m. He races to the airport to fly to Dallas for the draft. He lands at 5:45. He knew the traffic would be bad, so he hired a helicopter, which he found on Yelp, and he had him fly to the stadium in Arlington, and he got there right before you were drafted. What's that say about his love for you, and what did that extra effort mean to you?
It means the world to me, but just having a brother like that who cares genuinely about me and goes through all that trouble just to see me on a special day, it means the world to me. And then a guy like my brother, you guys don't know my brother. My brother is just one of those guys. He does a lot of that for just to say he got the picture and just to say he did it too. So he's a funny dude, and he has one of the, he said on his Instagram, he has one of the most legendary pictures coming off that helicopter. So it was funny to hear him talk about that. But yeah, he genuinely loves me, and I'm glad that he went through all that trouble just for me. And he know I'll do the same for him.
Dude, that is so funny that he's doing it for love, but he's also doing it.
Just at Chubb, Chubb.
Okay,
so
you got it.
You can find him right there.
It's like, he loves me and everything, but he loves the gram too, and he's going to make sure he gets that shot. I like it. Now listen, there's no secret. The team's record is not what anybody would like it to be so far this season, but at the same time, four of the losses have been by a single score. So do you feel like this team is close to turning it around and breaking out?
Yeah, I feel like these close losses that we have are it's bittersweet to say it's good for us because no loss is good, but to have the losses be so close, and we know where the flaws are and how stuff has been happening. It might have been in the first or second quarter, but it's changing the whole outcome of the game. So just correcting those small mistakes and learning from it as a team.
Now, you were back at NC State last night, and the school honored your number, and they put your name up on the wall at Carter-Finley Stadium. What's it like to see your name up there next to Philip Rivers and Mario Williams?
crazy because I remember when I first got to state, my official visits and stuff, I looked up at the in the Ring of Honor, saw the greats that came through there, and then my sophomore year, I got honored to wear the number 9, and so I remember having a conversation with my coach in the office about changing my number and stuff like that, and so it's just great to see how it all came full circle, how much I've been blessed throughout the past couple of years, and it's just an amazing feeling.
Hey, when Dave Doran said to you, "How about number 9?" What was your first reaction? Did you think you were up to it and ready for it at that point?
No, I actually wanted number 7 because of Clowney. Clowney wore it in college and stuff like that. And so when he told me number 9, I was like, that's big shoes to fill. In my head, I said that's big shoes to fill. But to him, I said, yeah, I think I could do that. So I went through a lot of, like, stuff with my parents. Like, hey, my coach said he thinks I'm ready for this for that, blah, blah, blah. What do y'all think? I don't know if I'm ready yet, stuff like that. So just having my parents there with me, my brother there with me, it was a lot of support. And for Coach Doran to believe in me like that, it's very special.
So when you look back on that, like right now you're a pro and it's a business and you understand this. And like you don't go out with the fellas. Everybody goes home. They've got their own families. I mean, this is business at the highest level. As you look back at the college experience, it had to be a blast. What kind of thoughts and memories do you have at that time in your life?
Oh, man, just the guys from college are great friend of mine. I got a lot of teammates that probably be in my wedding one day. Just how much we've bonded over the past 4 years and stuff like that. Being with each other in the locker room, going to class with each other, stuff like that. It's just all been fun, having some great memories with some great people. And I'm glad I got to go to NC State and meet the people that I did.
Alvin, are you ready to roll it? Go ahead. I'll look back on the week that was.
Racing.
Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. A tremendous Monday to you. What's going on? How was the weekend? I spent the entire weekend in Wisconsin. It was great. I will reset that. But back in Cali, where I belong. Nice to have you here.
All right, starting with the NFL.
There was some crazy hype surrounding that Sunday night matchup. Tom Brady v. Aaron Rodgers.
Maybe the best way to settle this debate is to play it out head to head.
Damn, Mike. Thanks.
Yeah! In for the touchdown!
That was one of the most Patriot wins of all time. In the end, it was not a showdown between two great quarterbacks playing to be the GOAT. It was a dude in a cutoff hoodie who came out on top.
Bill the GOAT.
Totally commercial free there, boy.
I Afraidy.
I am not going to be calling your guest host while you're away, Jim.
First thing Saturday morning, I was reaching for PBRs instead of coffee. Yeah. Wisco's finest. And let me tell you something. It tasted like butter. It tasted like Cristal in a can.
Mike Thomas, 72 yards.
He goes get the Joe Horn.
Benjamin Watson.
I said to Michael, you didn't know. I remember watching Joe Horn. Where he found a flip phone, I don't know.
But he found two.
Exactly.
Krill Intention coming right back at him. Krill Intention.
Great finish. Unbelievable throwdown. There is a horse right now with a jungle interest, and you should follow it. We are joined by Syracuse quarterback Eric Dungy.
In years past, you know, usually we're just reliant on our passing offense, but now that we got a little balance, it's nice to defense try to stop the pass, but, you know, we can rely on that run.
Mike Freeman.
My Star Trek communicator went out for a second.
You all right? Does it work now? You better now?
It's better now.
Email.
Roll up on people in water beds. I had a water bed. When I was 16, I got one for my 16th birthday. Man, that was so badass. God, I love that thing. I'll tell you something. Vance Smack as a teenager got after it on that water bed. Yeah. Anyway, what's popping, Twitter?
Well, we had some early opportunities.
Nobody has a crisper, sharper clapping game in the NFL than Jason Garrett. Man, and don't sleep on his gum chewing.
Chew it.
When it comes to clapping and chewing, he's a Hall of Famer. But when it comes to developing a quarterback and leading an offense, that's not really his thing.
How about this?
Gum chewing. Yeah! Jerry, respectfully, something seems a little bit different. Did you have any work done?
What do you mean?
I mean, did you get carved? Because there's still a scalpel on your face. Eric Almirola, I can understand why you were hot. How do you reconcile that?
As racers, you know, what happens in the heat of the moment is usually a lot more escalated than Tuesday or Wednesday.
Denver, Dan.
Props to Afraidy coming in still rocking a phone from 20 years ago. But what was all that static?
Ah. Did you drop the needle on that scratched up record before you made that call?
Get Odell Beckham Jr. the ball. He needs it badly. Help us, Romy. Help us.
We are joined by Utah State head coach Matt Wells.
All I know is this. There's a lot of small towns out there, but when you can count the stoplights, it's a small town, and it's 7 and a blinking light.
Le'Veon, if you're listening, I really don't care what you do. Just do something and end this. Put all of us out of our collective misery.
Please.
We're talking to Robert Klemko. So what about Greg Williams? Somebody quite like that guy.
He's anything outside of his reputation, which is, you know, on a hard charging,
kill the head, the body will die.
Can be somewhat abrasive.
Affect the head.
Crass guy.
Science!
took it right out of his hand.
That was not some bye game. State directional school. That was against Kentucky. If you hate Duke, it's going to be a long, long year.
We did it! We did it!
Coaches are somebody else's problem.
Tezzy Roosevelt.
We did it!
We did it!
I don't want
Bruce Pedregon joining me in studio.
Maybe we need to educate Brad a little bit. Brad's in Corona. He should go out to Pomona. It's like, how can you live in Southern California and not be down with drag racing?
How many more lives do we have to lose? How many more mass murders does there need to be before something's done? Thoughts and prayers are necessary. Moment of silence is fine, but this in and of itself is not going to fix this.
The coverage was on TV. People don't even pause and look at it anymore.
Can't believe how hard it hit us today.
This is not a political issue.
How many more lives do we have to lose?
We got to do something. This has got to stop.
He went over to everybody, Scottie Pippen, B.J. Armstrong. Nobody guards a rookie. He's all mine. Before you know it, I had three fouls, played almost 6 or 7 minutes, and he come over to me, and he's like, welcome to the NBA, young fella.
Email.
Yeah, I know I drove into the den. I thought I was going into the garage. Did that den have that hanging tennis ball that you drove in to measure to see how close you could get? No. Unless you see that swinging tennis ball, Joel, don't drive into it.
Looks like he had eaten Bryce Harper instead of representing him.
Just leave Flight Deck Friday alone, because my man lost. Three followers in the purge last night.
Give me back my
followers.
Pittsburgh 52.
One tweet that said, I'll take the Titanic plus five against the iceberg. Love Trevor.
Iceberg, run ahead.
Do the best that I can for our football team. Hopefully you can respect that, but maybe not.
Do not disrespect the greatest American hero, Dan Shaughnessy. Bradley Chubb.
You guys don't know my brother. My brother is just one of those guys. He does a lot of that just to say he got the picture and just to say he did it too. So he's a funny dude.
First time I had a PBR back in the day, I thought that somebody had filled up a can full of urine.
I want to talk sports with you.
Live long and prosper, baby.
Trevor, this is the moment we've all been waiting for.
Oh, me.
Hi, Jim.
Titanic tussle.
Look forward to being on with you again, man. All the best.
Garlic Baldwin.
Go dog.
Today's phrase, ass pipe.
Just be like us, Tyler.
Goodbye.
Good night.